Time for Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt here in studio with us. And Bruce, you've got a piece of original fiction that you've crafted for us.
Yeah, I was always thought about doing this. We do all these year-end things, and I like to do them before the gift-giving season is in full swing so that people can get stuff. And I hadn't finished a book recently, and I thought I'd just try this. It's called Winter Ball. Couldn't field two teams on Founders Day, I said, so how do we find 18 guys for Christmas Eve? Jimmy Sheck's Northfield team challenged us to 7 innings, Pernie said, so we only need 9. Even so, we started 3, I said, it'll be dark at 4. The school board gave me the lights until 6 for $100, losing team pays. Okay, who's in, I asked. With you, the Sandwich, Magnuson, Ramirez, Coates, Devlin, and 2 Colby kids, he knows. When I hesitated, Purdy said, there's no snow, the field's frozen, and it'll be cold. All good reasons not to play, but I need this game, so please, for old time's sake. Though unnerved, Purdy said he needed the game, I said, I'll play. You want to limber up tomorrow, be at the gym at noon, he said. Jansen's coming. The Sandwich comes from Patrick Purdy, Brian Brodinski, and Ollie Jansen, our high school outfield, PB&J. Good wheels, strong arms and gloves, mediocre at the plate. Hell, our pitchers were better hitters, like Cecil Ramirez, who clubbed 3 homers in a game, as many as the Sandwich managed that year combined. Senior year, we led the league in putouts and assists. Were there stats for robbing guys of hits or preventing them from taking an extra base, we'd have had those too. Purdy, who plays left, has the most accurate arm and threw out a jag of runners trying to score on short flies. I've got center because I cover the most ground, and Jansen is in right because he can rifle a strike to third from the warning track. Purdy's uncle Greg, who played in the Cape Cod League, joined us at the gym, and we tossed the ball around until he and Jansen split to do some last-minute shopping. Alone with Purdy, I said, why do you need this game? Just do, he said. My guts clenched, but I let it go. Every June, I visit my folks and play in the Founders Day game, a tradition born in the 1940s. In the inaugural game between our town team and Weaverport, my grandfather spun a 3-hit shutout immortalized in a now yellowed article from the Gazette that hangs in a homemade frame in my parents' hallway. As I started playing in high school and my father played into his 40s, we were in the game together. Last Founders Day, we only mustered 16 players, forcing us to play 8-a-side with an anything hit to the opposite field is an out rule. Purdy was crushed. Even during World War II, there was a game every June, he said, over a pint in the beer garden. This is awful. The mill was running 3 shifts then, I said, but he wasn't consoled. At game time, clouds rolled in on a light breeze, and though my car's thermometer read 42, it felt colder. Sheck, who we know from Legion Ball, had cobbled together a team of high school and college kids, and some older guys not ready to hang up their spikes. Sheck and Purdy agreed Greg would umpire behind the plate with Ted Martelli, the Northfield High coach, handling the bases. Teams shook hands and promised not to carp about any calls. As I trotted to the outfield, the moon peeking above the bleachers, I realized I'd never played a night game. Ramirez was money. 1 ground ball through 3. Sheck matched him until Purdy led off the 3rd with a gapper double that scooted over the frozen ground to the fence. I popped to 2nd, but Magnuson looped a 2-0 hanger into right, which their fielder bobbled, and we took a 1-run lead. Ollie fouled out to 1st, and Caleb, one of the Colby kids, went down on looking on a borderline pitch. To his credit, the kid hustled to the dugout without a glance at Greg. As we jogged back to the outfield, I asked Purdy, that hit sting? Couldn't feel my fingers before, he said. Sure can't now. We traded runs in the 4th and the 5th. The 6th was scoreless. We went to the 7th, up 3-2. I tucked my mitt under my arm and blew on my hands while Ramirez took his warm-ups. The moon, earlier a bright orange disc on the horizon, had risen overhead as bright as a new wiffle ball. The small partisan crowd, bundled in parkas and blankets in the bleachers, mostly teens, began singing Sweet Caroline, a cappella and off-key, much to their own delight. I had to wonder why the hell they'd come out in the first place. I prayed Ramirez would get through the inning unscathed so we could pack up long before the lights went out. The first batter lifted a lazy fly, almost lost in the lights, but snagged for the first out. Ramirez walked the next batter, then the next guy lined a single past 3rd off Coates' glove. 1 down, men at the corners. Purdy called time, hustled to the mound where he was joined by the catcher Topher, the other Colby kid. After Greg went out to end the confab, Purdy shouted, "You got this, Cecil," and trotted back out to left. Ramirez induced the next batter, a kid who looked maybe 15, to ground hard to short. Devlin charged, barehanded it, and threw home. The runner slid hard, but Topher tagged him and held on. Two men down, men at first and second. Purdy called time again and jogged over to me. "This guy Lynch is a Punch and Judy hitter, so move in a few steps," he said, hiding his face behind his glove as if we were on TV. "And the kid on second can fly." Then he loped back to his position. Ramirez got ahead 2-1 with three sliders, the last two fouled off, then froze Lynch with as soft a noon to six curve as I've ever seen. Game over. The crowd fled to their cars, and both teams hustled to gather their gear. We shook hands, guys made plans to meet at Lost Cove Tavern, and in 5 minutes the field was deserted except for me and Purdy. "I had beer," I said as we sat in the dugout. "Nah, no alcohol for a week," he said. I shivered, not from cold, but fear, and said, "You okay?" "Yeah, so far," he said. "Meaning?" I said. "Been blood in my urine. Doc Benson thought it might be a muscle tear, but ordered some tests. Had two. Next one's a kidney scan. That's why I couldn't let that half-assed Founders Day game be my last with a sandwich." "Jumping the gun, aren't you, man?" "Maybe," Purdy said. "Your folks know?" "It's Christmas, man. Can't bring them down now," he said. "I guess not," I said. Purdy started to speak twice and said, "It's so damn different here now. Every year, more guys leave for better jobs, more to do. Hell, this turns out benign. Even I might move to Portland or Boston." "If it's not benign, buddy, dump my ashes on the bay the Founders Day after I go, okay?" Neither of us spoke for several seconds. Then I said, "When will you know?" "Scans January 3rd at 9 in Bangor. Doc should have the results by noon." "Look, man, it's 2022, not 1922. You'll be fine," I said. "Hope so," Purdy said. "Call my cell as soon as you know, okay?" "Sure," Purdy said. He picked up his glove, he stood and said, "If it's good news, we play next Christmas Eve. Deal?" I hugged him to me and said, "Yeah, deal."
Oh, man, that is great, Bruce.
Thanks. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. It was a fun story to do. Probably will appear sometime in a slightly different form when I work on it a little more, but it was fun. As somebody who's had all those kidney things and it wasn't benign, I just got thinking about, you know, what those discussions were like, and then I thought about playing baseball on Christmas Eve, and I thought, they go together.
Well, and it captures small towns and friendship, and I like PB&J.
Yeah, you know, I experimented with BLT, and that didn't seem to work. PB&J seemed better, and that seemed to be the best one, only because I thought everybody's had a PB&J at some time in their life.
Yeah. Well, that was wonderful. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure. It was fun to do.
What a great gift to us. Well, that was beautiful. What do we got for Sports Lit in the coming year? You got some plans for January?
I do. We've got a book about horse racing in Chicago, the history of horse racing in Chicago, which, you know, anytime
that's all clean and above board.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. It being Chicago, all the influences of organized crime and the like, and the history of horse racing in Chicago is pretty interesting because no one thinks of Chicago as a horse racing town now, but apparently it was the epicenter of horse racing in America at one time, solely because of all the illegal stuff. As my wife's late stepfather, who was a very brilliant lawyer, used to say, he didn't drink and he would toast with his apple juice and go to crime, to organized crime. So I like that. We've got some other books coming from there's one about the history of cycling in Alaska, which is coming from Nebraska. A lot of the new titles don't come out till February. So I have some things coming in January. Hopefully we may have some more author visits in January. But by February and March, we should be back into the head of the books.
Excellent. Looking forward to it. Thanks, Bruce.
My pleasure.